Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry. As we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager, your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, who in 2002 also played the character of Matt in a season two episode of Crossing Jordan, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/thedeltaflyers. Do you remember that credit?
That is such a weird, that may be the last time I legitimately acted, and it probably.
I thought it was the TV movie. It wasn't the TV movie?
A TV movie, which TV movie?
The one where you had to be on kind of, you know, a little hallucinogenics and stuff.
Oh, that wasn't a TV movie. That was a horror film. That was a
horror film.
That was a feature that
was before Crossing Jordan then, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We finished the series, the last season of Voyager, and then I went straight out to do that movie.
Right.
We shot it out near the Hamptons in New York. And
okay. So that's 2001 that you did that.
2001, spring of 2001. And then the summer of 2001. This was the season premiere of Crossing Jordan. I feel like it was the first, it was a two-part premiere.
Okay.
So it was shooting in July. And I had decided before Crossing Jordan, I decided to take a year off because we had just finished the series. And I just did that movie. And I was like, I want to try this directing thing. And Crossing Jordan called. And I don't know if they offered it to me or maybe I went and auditioned. I don't remember.
Okay.
But I was really not, I didn't want to do it. I was just like, I want to do this directing thing. And as soon as I got it and started filming, I was like, oh, I don't want to be doing this. Like, I want to be direct. I remember very vividly, like going, nope, I'm not doing this again for a while. I don't want to. I was just, I don't know.
You were just over it at the time.
I was just over it. So I don't even remember what the story was. I think it was a crime show, right? Crossing Jordan was a medical show or a crime. I don't even
remember.
It was
a legal show.
A legal show? Okay.
I
don't remember. I don't remember. I feel like.
You don't even remember the principals in this show, do you?
I don't remember anything about it.
Oh my goodness.
All I remember is being on set. I was over at Universal and then we shot in Hollywood at some restaurant or club or something.
Yeah.
I just remember thinking like, I don't want to be doing this. Like I want to be directing, like, cause it was a guest star that didn't have much to do and I was just bored. And anyway, that's
so this credit was your swan song as
an
actor.
It was kind of my swan song. I didn't know it at the time.
Yeah.
But I think I remember because we had finished Voyager and I went to do that movie, which was a super low budget, cheesy horror film.
Yes.
And then I had been offered the chance to go to Broadway and replace someone in a Broadway show.
What?
And I remember struggling because it was a 6 month contract. And I was like, I don't know if I want to go to New York for 6 months. My kids were young. And
what was the show?
It was Cabaret on Broadway. It was the musical Cabaret.
Oh, wow.
And they offered me Cliff to take over for Cliff for 6 months.
That would have been fun.
It would have been fun. And I really struggled. And I was like, I went, no, I don't want to go to New York right now. I want to stay here and try to direct.
Yeah.
My kids are in school. I don't want to do all that.
Pull them out. Yeah. Okay.
So I had passed on the Broadway show. And then there I am doing this tiny guest spot in this two-parter. And I was like, really? Like I pass up a Broadway show, but
this? Yeah.
This is my, like, this is what I'm going to do? No. I'm going to direct. If I'm going to pass on the Broadway show, I'm going to direct.
Yeah.
So it was really like all that stuff coming together. And I was nah.
The stars.
So that's
aligned.
What I remember of that. Yeah. That's what I remember of that.
Okay. Okay.
I don't remember if it was a crime show or a medical show or illegal. I have no idea. But I remember it was the end of my pursuing acting jobs.
Wow. Okay. All right. Thank you for filling me in on that. Yeah.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, so this week's episode.
Yes,
are you ready?
What is it?
The Haunting of Deck 12.
Oh, yeah.
The Haunting of Deck 12. Okay.
Okay.
Let's go watch this episode. We will be right back with our recap and discussion of The Haunting of Deck 12. See you soon, everyone. All right, everyone. We are back from watching The Haunting of Deck 12.
I'm so scared.
I'm scared too. First of all, I want to say in the bonus material for our Patreon patrons, you talked about how the Turbolift just completely skipped Deck 12. Like, it's a missing deck. And you weren't entirely off. Like, things were kind of messing up. So I was like, oh, I'm impressed. Okay.
I know. See, right? I just have good instincts.
What we were 1,000% off on was our guesstimate that David Livingston was doing the next episode.
Oh.
We were completely off. He did the penultimate episode.
David Livingston. And he did a great job.
He really
well
did.
Directed.
Oh, my goodness. And we did not get the writer correct either.
I said Ken Biller, and he's part of the team.
Is he part of the
So the screenplay, the teleplay was by Mike Sussman, Ken Biller, and Brian Fuller.
Oh, right. Okay. The three
group effort. Yes. Mike Sussman came up with the story and then they all wrote it together. My guess is because this was near the end of season six, and they probably were like, this is a great idea, but we have to have a script in 3 days.
Let's you take the first group act, effort. You take the second act, I'll take the third act, right?
Yep, exactly. So,
okay, well, then that
they
makes
probably
sense.
Were scrambling and needed everybody writing at the same time.
So. I gotta tell you, this collaboration worked. I mean, if this is the way to have a good script, maybe they should always be under the gun and split it between three writers because I thought it was a fabulous script and well directed by David. Be perfectly honest. So
okay, so let's do our poetry synopsis for The Haunting of Deck 12. Let's start with your haiku.
Thank you. Neelix babysits. Story time is scary time. Was it real or not?
Wow, that was good. You captured a good synopsis in that.
I love it.
That haiku.
I love it. Nice. I felt it. I cannot wait for your limerick. As usual, I'm always so happy to hear this. So
here we go with our limerick synopsis of Haunting of Deck 12. Here we go. A scary nebula. So Voyager powers down till it clears. The Borg kids need a sitter. So Neelix volunteers. An alien takes over the ship. But Janeway won't lose her grip. The moral is, don't be controlled by your fears.
Oh, wow. You put the lesson in there, too? That's amazing.
I know, I did. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. I like that. Okay.
You had babysitter in your haiku.
Yeah, I had sitter. Yes. We had a little bit of overlap
there.
It
was nice.
Yes, it was.
Our guest stars.
Yes.
Everybody that guest stars in this episode, we have seen before.
So we don't even need to go through their stuff.
We've talked about them, but we'll list them here. We have Manu Antirami as Icheb.
Yes.
Marley McLean as Mazzotti. Yes. Zoe McClellan as Tal Celis.
Which I did not know she was in other episodes. I was like, what? She's back again?
I know.
And I have a big scene with her, so I was a little confused.
But I thought she was used very well in this episode.
She was.
As sort of the, you know, the lower deck sort of innocent, scared. Used very well. We also had Kurt and Cody Weatherill as the twins.
Rezi and Aban, I think. Yeah.
So everybody's familiar faces, which I love when that kind of thing can happen.
Yes, we know that.
All right.
Yes, we do. All right.
Let's get into it.
Let's just jump right
in. It's a scary story, people.
It is. You start it up. Start us in mess hall.
Well, the first thing is we see a space fly by, and immediately we know from the title, we know it's going to be scary potentially.
Yeah.
The space flyby, the music was creepy.
It was scary.
Ominous.
That's the other thing I forgot to talk about. The music was amazing. All the background music was very, very good for this episode. Mm-hmm. Yes.
We go from our space flyby, our ominous music, into the mess hall.
Mm.
And Neelix is there. He's shutting off the burners. He's cleaning up. He has the computer turn the lights out, but he seems anxious.
He sure does.
And he's turning things off. And then he goes to
exit,
the doors.
Right?
He's trying to exit, and suddenly Seven of Nine pops in and scares him. And he's got a high pitched, yell.
But
he makes a lot of noises.
He does, but very believable. Good job by Ethan Phillips. I definitely believe
it was right
that
on the edge
scared.
For me. It was on the edge. And no, did you notice? So they have a little exchange. She says, sorry, you know, sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. Yeah. And he says, well, I'm just a little jumpy considering what happened last time.
Right. So now here's a clue to something. I mean, okay. My whole question to you is, this whole story that he tells is a watered down version of the truth, or it is completely fabricated by him?
I think it's completely fabricated by him.
Really? Okay.
I do. But they don't, you know, in the end, spoiler alert, yes. You don't know if any of this is
that.
True.
I like to believe that this really did happen in some way, shape, or form.
I think he made it all up very cleverly, but he kind of scared himself at the same time. Like sometimes when you, you know, you get, I mean, I've been on projects where I'm working on it, directing or whatever.
Yeah.
And you sort of take on the life of what you're working on. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like it starts to feel the mood of it and all starts to feel real. So I feel like that might have been kind of what was going on.
Okay.
But did you notice in the scene? So they have their little exchange. She says, you know, you need to watch the Borg kids. And he says, she does say that there's going to be a ship-wide shutdown of the main power.
Right.
And she says, you know, you need to watch the Borg kids. He goes, well, what if they ask questions? And she says, oh, you'll figure it out. During this exchange, this quick little scene, I felt like Jerry was about to laugh. And I feel like when they were shooting her close up, I feel like Ethan Phillips was goofing off and trying to make her laugh or something. Cause there, she just had a smile on her face. Like,
yes,
stop doing because that.
We've talked about this before. Ethan's pride and joy. One of the things he loved to do was when it was your close up, he would like to say his lines, he would say different than what his lines were in the
script.
Or
he'd have his dentures hanging out of his mouth.
He
sideways,
would do something to mess with
he'd
you.
Be making weird, he'd be giving weird line readings. I feel like he was doing it in this scene.
I did not catch that. So you see it because you I guess you were watching more closely than I was.
I picked up.
What my takeaway was that she's becoming more like Janeway in a way. You know, I just felt that end little dialogue of her saying, you know, you have considerable childcare experience. I'm sure you'll manage. It was a very Janeway like comment that would have come from out of Janeway's mouth
is what
I felt. So I felt there's a little bit of a transition of Seven sort of being that you know, Janeway mentored her and now it's rubbing off on her.
Yeah. But it's a nice little scene. So it sets up a ton of story. We know they're going to shut down the power.
Right.
We know that Neelix is going to babysit the kids, that he's got to be gentle with them because they might, you know, be scared during this shutdown. And then we go to the bridge.
Yeah.
And they're looking at the view screen. Everybody's looking at the view screen and we see a nebula and she says, let our momentum carry us through.
Yeah.
As we approach this nebula. So, you know, Harry makes a comment. Tom makes a comment about, I think Tom says something like, it looks like it's something out of an Edgar Allan Poe story. And I was like, what? Edgar Allan Poe was never in space. Like he never wrote.
But so
it's like, what a weird.
Didn't you talk about in our intro being like floating through space? Like just.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
So I was like, what the?
Maybe I was
right. He kind of called a lot of things in a way that he had no clue about.
No.
So I think you should go buy a lottery ticket after this. That's my belief. Okay. All right.
Yeah, Tom says something about Edgar Allan Poe. Harry says it looks like a vampire bat.
Okay.
I was like, why did they give you that line?
Can I just say this right now? I remember when we were filming this, there's nothing on screen. Okay, they add that in later, right? In terms of the actual image that we see. So I was like, oh my God, I hope they don't make me look stupid on this. And then when I watched, now I recall watching this episode and going, wait a minute. That doesn't look anything like a vampire bat. So it's sort of they backed me into a corner. They really
did. They backed me into a corner too with Edgar Allan Poe. Like,
Okay.
But they were trying to set up scary that our impressions of this thing is scary. Tuvok comments,
he completely disses us.
He's like, you guys
juvenile
are idiots.
Yes. Imaginations.
Imagining things in clouds or whatever.
Yes.
I wish
I was still a juvenile now, but it's okay.
Janeway gives the order, shut down the power, so the bridge goes dark. So we see the hallway go out, and people with, you know, like Sims beacons or flashlights. We see sickbay go dark. Yeah. Doctor shuts down his program. We go into the cargo bay, and the Borg kids are regenerating, and then the alcoves go out, and the kids wake up.
Yep.
And they're nervous. and Neelix is there. He says, there's nothing to worry about. But I like this shutdown with the Borg kids because David did these like super close and wide angle push-ins on Neelix and the kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, it felt like a horror movie.
He did. He did such a good job. Stylistically speaking, yeah. it was very, very compelling.
Yeah. And then we go back to the bridge. And Kim says that all decks are, shutdown is completed on all the decks. Janeway tells Seven, are we ready? And Seven acknowledges. And then we cut out to space and we see that Voyager is literally just floating now.
Floating into the nebula.
And we go back to Cargo Bay. The kids have woken up and we've had that scary moment. And then Neelix is trying to calm them down. And he's explaining that the main power was cut out.
The amount of dialogue that Ethan Phillips had in this is
incredible.
So much dialogue. And he handled it masterfully, I might add.
As the storyteller. He's the narrator and the storyteller of this
whole episode. He should narrate every Voyager episode. Yeah. Okay.
He should. But Neelix tells the kids that the EM emissions could damage the ship. And so we've cut out our warp drive and powered down so that we can float through this nebula.
Yeah.
And Icheb basically says, well, the deflector shields are fine. They would protect us from any nebula discharge. So that can't be true. So Icheb's questioning a lot.
Yeah, he is. He's questioning a lot. But Mazzotti's got the sass, though. She's so sassy in this episode.
She is very sassy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Neelix even says, you know, let's just read a Flotter book while we wait. You know, he tries to do that. And they're like, no, does this have anything to do with Deck 12?
Mazzotti? Right.
Because Naomi told her that Deck 12 was haunted.
And it's off limits to everyone but senior officers. Mm-hmm. So there you go. There is some mystery behind this.
And Neelix is like, no, there's no such thing as ghosts, you guys. But they continue to ask questions like, what is going on? What's on Deck 12? Does this have anything to do with it? And he finally agrees. He says, look, I'll tell you what really happened to Deck 12. And they sit down around this like lantern kind of thing. And it felt like a campfire story. It was beautifully staged. And, you know, they all sit down in a circle around this lantern, and he starts telling the story.
So
he says it all began several months ago. So good. And we see we go to space, we see it flying by another nebula, and he says it all started several months ago. And we cut to the mess hall, and there's a ship shake. I think it was cool they had some stuff on the wall, like the utensils or whatever move, which, you know,
so how did they do that? How do you think they did that?
I don't know if they had some
fishing wire.
Yeah, probably fishing wire on them, and they were all tied together, and then they just removed it in VisiFX or something.
Yeah,
because our sets don't move. Like they can't. our bridge never shakes. The mess hall never shakes. So if you want to see things moving, they have to actually move them. So.
And that's a question that I think maybe you also have gotten at conventions. Did the bridge, was it on a moving, you know, people will ask that question because they assume that maybe it was, but it wasn't.
Yeah, there's a ship shake. Neelix is there. Tuvok comes in and he says that the ship was in a J-class nebula. We were getting deuterium for our antimatter reactors and warp drive. He says that the deuterium we got will last us for another 1,000 light years. That sounds like a lot of deuterium we found.
Well, yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're 70,000 light. Well, at this point, we're like 35,000 light years from home. So, 1,000 light years. So, 1/30.
Pretty good amount of deuterium.
Yeah, that's a decent amount.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Neelix sits down and wants to talk to Tuvok because he's anxious about this.
Yeah.
And he basically says, as the morale officer, you know, I should talk to you. The crew is very nervous. They're very upset. And we see behind him the crew all eating, and they're not nervous at all.
No.
You know, you see the nebula out the window. Neelix is the one who's terrified. He starts freaking out.
Tuvok comes up with a really quick solution. He's like, well, perhaps the captain might give you permission to install curtains. And this changes Neelix's mood immediately. He's like, that's a excellent idea. And I have just the right material. And he's off to go take care of that.
He goes to get, which I was like, Neelix just collects material. He's got fabric sitting around.
Yeah. Oh. You don't know that? That's his pastime. He has that's one of his hobbies. Neelix collects.
Does he use the material for his different fashion that he wears? Uniforms?
I think so. But remember, we found him. He was a junk collector. So the guy clearly collects a lot of stuff. Yeah. You know, he's a hoarder. He's a hoarder, I'm going to say.
Been in his quarters? We must have.
No, it's probably just filled with stuff.
That would be amazing if we went to go in there and it was quarters, just, and he's a hoarder.
He's a hoarder. He has a little bit of everything, a little bit of the Delta Quadrant. That would
have been amazing.
It would have been awesome.
Yeah,
totally.
So he goes to get his fabric. We cut to the bridge. Yeah. And I think Harry says something about Nadion emissions.
Yeah, because he says the nebula is about to, it's beginning to destabilize. Janeway asks for the cause, and he says, well, it has something to do with the Nadion emissions being produced by the Bassard collectors. And at this point, we get pulled back into Cargo Bay 2, where the story is interrupted by Icheb saying, oh, you're not remembering that correctly. And Neelix is like, what do you mean? And Icheb, again, being the spoiler, he's got to be the know-it-all, says the Bassard collectors don't produce Nadion emissions.
And yeah, Neelix, so this story can't be right.
Neelix is like, well, it's so funny because he every time he gets questioned, he just kind of brushes past it, you know. Yeah. And he does such a good job with that.
He's also when Icheb is correcting him about the Bassard collectors, Neelix is pouring some snacks onto a plate. Did you notice this?
No.
What happened? It looks like a bag of chips or something, but when he pours it out into the plate, it looked to me like it was, you know, dried apple.
Yes.
Like slices, like the dehydrated apple slices.
Yes.
It looked kind of like that.
They had that stuff. They used that stuff. I remember they used that kind of stuff.
I feel like that's what he was pouring on the plate. Yeah. And I was like, boy, Neelix, you're not a real party animal. Like, that's the snacks you're going to give the kids?
I know. He went straight to Trader
Reese's
Joe's.
Pieces or something?
No, that was a Trader Joe's item for sure.
Yeah. What about Sour Patch Kids or something? Yeah, like,
something
come on, these
fun.
Are kids.
Exactly.
Anyway,
apple
slices.
Snacks. Yeah. So funny.
So we go back to the bridge, continuing Neelix's stories. He narrates all of this, right?
Right.
So he's narrating it. We go to the bridge. Chakotay says that they've collected about 80% of the deuterium that they wanted, and they should probably leave. And she says, let's get out of here and stop this dilithium intake, this thing that's happening. So she orders Paris to take the ship out of the nebula, and then Neelix is continuing the story. We go back to him talking, and he says, just as Paris was about to engage impulse engines, he yells out, zap. And I literally, when I was watching this, I jumped.
Did you jump?
That's how good
Ethan Phillips was in this. I agree.
I was like, what happened? What happened?
And then, it's so good.
And it was like when he said that, we cut to the mess hall and we see that there's like a lightning strike or something.
right.
But between his voice and the cut to the mess hall and everybody jumping, I literally jumped.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting because back in Cargo Bay 2, you know, Mazzotti speaks. But then we hear Azan and Rebbe speak, which is very, very rare. Those two don't really say much, but they do say the ghost. And Rebbe's like, shh, let him finish. So we have a little bit of dialogue from them.
We have a little bit from them. Yeah. By the way, when we cut to the mess hall and that lightning strikes and everything, and I jumped.
Yeah.
Neelix walks into the frame. Do you remember this? And he had a giant roll of fabric under his arm. Like literally like from a fabric store. It's like,
so it wasn't
moly.
Even, it wasn't even,
he wasn't
just
kidding.
A little bit of, he had a whole, it was rolled up. Like you went to the store and bought the entire, you know. Okay.
It literally looked like fabrics, like he was working at a fabric store and came to give you your sample or something.
I love it. It's very funny.
Yeah. So anyway, they're like, continue.
Yes. So the zap, what was the zap? The zap was the EM discharge that penetrated the hull, and it went through to deck 7, deck 10. So, you know, Kim's like trying to increase power to structural integrity. Janeway asks for a damage report. Chakotay says power outages on 3 decks. Auxiliary subprocessors are offline and no injuries reported. So everyone's okay, but definitely it was very shocking.
It was unexpected, this discharge. And it seems like, you know, she says, well, you know, let's get repairs and resume course. So it's not, this doesn't seem like a big deal.
No, but Neelix in the narration of the story says, "We'd taken some minor damage, but for the most part, everything was fine. Or so we thought." So he continues to add tension to this story from his narration, yes, which is great. Okay. Did I say I want Neelix to narrate every episode? I already said that, right?
Yeah,
okay.
You did say that.
Thank you.
I agree.
All right.
He says that so we thought we were alone, and the kids start asking questions. They're like, "Well, is it species blah blah blah?" Like, they have all these Borg species. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And he's like, "What are you
species
talking about?"
Species 5973. Yeah,
they were starting to freak him out because he's like, "What? There's a species named."
It's an interphasic species. And yeah, Neelix is kind of annoyed by it. He's like, "Okay, let's not even try to compare xenobiology. I can continue with this story, or, you know, it's up to you guys." So he kind of puts it in their court because he is slightly, you know, he scares himself a little bit when he's hearing about these interphasic species that the Borg have dealt with.
Yeah. And all so right. He goes back to his story and he's narrating about the malfunctions, but we have a space shot of the ship going by. As it goes by, we see that we're leaving the nebula.
Right.
And then we cut into the ready room. And I love this shot. It was like in the replicator, super wide lens.
Yes.
We see a cup of coffee appear.
Oh, and as the Livingston was just having
with his wide lenses.
Director's orgasm is what he was having at this point. He was so into it.
Here's my question. The cup of coffee appears. Chakotay's coming in from the other side of the room. We see him behind it. Janeway seems to come from like the other side of the room. Like, did she order the replicator from across the room and then walk in? Like, it was because of that wide lens, you see the whole room. And I was like, where the hell did she come from?
Yeah.
Like, she was a mile away when she ordered that cup of coffee. Anyway.
Well, if that's the least of your issues with this episode, it's still a damn good episode, regardless.
Yes, agreed.
But you're right. Where was she? Okay.
But Chakotay comes in. He says he gives the repair team's report that the damage was a little more serious than they originally thought. He says, two of the personnel transporters were out. Half the sonic showers are offline. Deck 5 has lost its artificial gravity.
We've talked about that in the past, how it would be cool if we had a shot or a scene where we saw artificial gravity being compromised, and we talk about it, but we don't see it.
They mention it. He does say Ensign Mulcahy hit his head on the ceiling.
The ceiling with the artificial gravity not being there any longer in that part of the ship. Yeah. Yes.
Janeway doesn't like the taste of her coffee at this point. She's like, so she goes over to the replicator.
Yeah.
And she wants another cup. The replicator replicates coffee.
First, before the cup.
Yeah. And it kind of in the shape
in a
of a
form
mug,
of a cup. And then it just
spills. And then the cup appears after. So clearly the replicators are malfunctioning.
Yeah. These are one of the strange malfunctions that Neelix has narrated.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she says to Chakotay, she's like, "Well, add the replicators to the list of damages." And she leans into the replicator.
Yeah.
And she says to the replicator.
Yeah.
Almost seductively. Like, she goes, "We're starting off on the wrong foot today, my friend." And I thought that was it was an unusual thing. We don't see Janeway talk to the replicator or talk to the ship.
No, because and even Chakotay's like, "Captain?" And what did she say? She goes, I'm sorry, I was talking to Voyager." And I kept thinking, if it was you there, you would have said, "I'm sorry, I was talking to the Voyager," is what you would have said.
Yeah, I would have.
You would have put
She says to Chakotay that she was talking to the ship. And he says, "Well, that's not weird. I used to talk to my Maquis ship." And she says, "Oh, really? What did you talk about?" He says, "Well, I can't tell you. That's
starship confidentiality. This is really, I love this dialogue. I really do. It was fun.
They both talk to their ships.
Yeah.
And somebody says, "Maybe we need therapy." One of them says that.
Right. Then they also have a deal. Like, let's not mention this to anyone else either. Yeah. Let's keep this between ourselves.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Okay, so then she looks out her window and she mentions that she saw this meteorite cluster. Chakotay says, "Oh, he didn't see anything weird, strange."
Problem with
about
that?
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Yeah, well, I would agree with you, but it's the same one we passed an hour ago." So, we're going in circles. We don't even know we're going in circles.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So she goes out to the bridge. Did you notice her hand off the bad coffee to somebody walking by? She's like, "Take this.
Take the bad coffee.
Get this disgusting coffee.
Underling, take this coffee from my hand." Yes.
She asked Tom to check his navigational sensors, and he says, yeah, everything.
According to my readings. Yeah, you're okay with it.
I'm okay with it. Tuvok runs a diagnostic, and he says, yeah, wait a minute. It looks like we are malfunctioning, and we're basically going in circles.
Right.
So she's like, wait a minute. Yeah. I'll stop. Let's reinitialize the systems here.
Yeah.
Let's figure out what's going on.
This is my favorite part. When you say, Paris goes, I'm telling you, we relied too much on 24th century technology. Captain, you give me a window and a sextant, and I guarantee you, I'll get you where you want to go. And right when you say that, the view screen, we go to warp. We jump to warp. Yeah. But your reaction is the best, because you look back at the screen, and then you look back at us, and you look at your timing of your head turns where it was
trying to squeeze out comedy where we can.
You were amazing, dude. Okay, it was perfect. Awesome. Good job, man.
Yeah, we jump. It was very funny, Tommy.
Yes.
We jump to warp. We can't shut down the engines. Engines are going on and off on their own. Janeway calls Torres in engineering, but she can't get an answer.
Yeah, there's no response. Exactly. Yeah.
Suddenly we have control again. The warp drive gets shut down. We come to a stop. Janeway says, contact engineering.
Doesn't she order Chakotay to go check it out? Is that what happened?
She says Chakotay, find out what's going on. And so Chakotay checks the computer, and the computer says, yeah, she is in engineering.
Yeah.
But then the computer starts listing where everybody is.
Yes.
And the computer says Ensign Tremari is on deck 4, section 30. Lieutenant Commander Tuvok is on the bridge. Crewman Unai was in the mess hall, and Ensign Vorek is in main engineering on level 2.
So she Janeway, gets Harry to shut the thing off. And
she puts her head in her hand. She's like, oh my God, what is this computer doing? It's listing everybody's location.
This is also because she didn't have her proper coffee.
She's break. Grumpy.
She's grumpy. She's grumpy.
She's like, shut that thing off. Yeah. Shut that thing off. Stop it from computers going nuts. So this is where she tells Chakotay, go find out what's
going on. Yeah, go figure out what's going on. So the next scene is basically in the turbo lift. And it doesn't matter where. So Chakotay says engineering, but it opens up. It's on a whole nother deck. It's not even anywhere close to engineering. No. But clearly, everything is malfunctioning.
Everything's malfunctioning. Yeah. He gets off, and clearly everything's malfunctioning on the bridge. Like, pretty clearly malfunctioning. Yeah. But when he gets out, there's people everywhere. And nobody seems... Nobody seems nervous. Like, nobody's looking around like, hey, these other systems aren't working either.
Right.
Everyone, I was like,
they should have been a little bit more on nerve.
Everybody seemed edge, totally fine. Right. Yeah, they're walking around like nothing's no problem. Right. So I was a little confused in that moment.
That's okay. But in this scene, he starts talking to the ship. he's like, I bet you wouldn't try to pull this on the captain. Have it your way. I'll walk. And the door's shut in his face as he's trying to walk out. Yes. And now the turbo lift drops into this free fall. Like, he's basically going to be doomed. Yeah,
we're like in the elevator shaft, basically. Yeah. And we see this thing coming right down fast.
Yeah.
And it was a cool VFX shot because we don't have a turbo lift shaft. That was all VFX.
We jump back to Cargo Bay 2, and Neelix is... He's still narrating. He's like, getting faster and faster. Anybody hungry? And so he completely changes the very tone. Funny. Yeah, very funny.
I feel
funny.
Like he might have improv that. Like, faster.
It's very possible. Very possible. And then Mazzotti is just, you know, she's beside herself.
Neelix! Like, she wants to end this
story. Yeah.
And like, he goes, you haven't finished your snacks.
Snacks are irrelevant. Continue the story. So she's bossy right now. Yeah. She really is. Maybe she learned a little from Seven, you know. Captain, come down to Astrometrics. Neelix, finish the story. So it's like, you know, it's kind of 70 in a way.
But he tells them that Chakotay was pinned to the ceiling, the stabilizers.
Now that's an image. Sorry, that's an image.
Everything was offline. The car could have crashed at the bottom of the shaft.
But just before death happened, the stabilizers reactivate and it saves Chakotay. He's not dead.
No, he's not dead. We cut to engineering and he finally is arriving in engineering.
Yeah.
And he's like, what is going on? Yeah. I think the ship is trying to kill me.
Kill me.
She says, I'm working on the problem here. We're all working on it. And it seems like there's bioneural gel packs.
The gel packs that
deck 13 that are the problem. So
burned out when the EM discharge came through from the nebula.
So they're going to go head out and work on the gel packs. We cut to the hallway.
She asked Chakotay to go with them, right? And he says, yeah, I'll go. Yeah.
We cut out to the hallway, and there is crewman Tal Selis, who we had met in the earlier episode, the Lower Decks girl who couldn't do math. And she pulls off a panel. She's obviously working on something. And before she does anything, Seven of Nine comes around the corner and she's like, move aside. And like, did I do something wrong?
Yeah.
She's always, she's very nervous. She's always making mistakes.
You caused the power failure in astrometrics.
And she's like, I haven't done anything. I didn't touch anything.
She's like, I've located the problem. It appears you inadvertently overloaded a series of EPS conduits while performing your diagnostic. And she's like, I didn't even start my diagnostic. And so Seven's confused. She's like, well, what were you doing? And Selis is like, nothing. I just got here.
I just, again,
I love this scene. You're right. I mean, this is such a great usage of Selis for sure. Yeah. And then there's all of a sudden some type of light flickering and a little bit of malfunctioning
after Seven realizes Tal didn't do anything, Seven starts pushing some buttons.
The buttons, and then that's when all the lights
and that's over. When the thing goes, that's and right. Selis is like, I knew it wasn't my fault.
I know that wasn't my fault. Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah,
very good.
It was funny. We go to another hallway somewhere.
We're on deck 13 now. We're on deck 13.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We're in deck 13 because we're behind the gel packs.
Yeah.
I love the way that David shot this scene with, you know, kind of obscuring their faces.
Great shot visually. Yeah. And you're right. There's no issue with those gel packs. They're not burnt out. There's no trace of EM discharge. So it's very, very confusing. And Chakotay's like, well, could it have dissipated rapidly? And Torres is like, no, it moved. And at this point, Chakotay's like, what moved? And Torres says like, yeah, well, it seems to be traveling through the bioneural circuitry, jumping from system to system. And Chakotay asks her to isolate it. And Torres is like, well, it's in a series of gel packs that interface with the environmental controls outside Cargo Bay 2. So Chakotay is like, well, we better try to get there before it moves elsewhere. But now they're getting weird thoughts of like, what could this be? Like, what's moves on its own like that? Is it sentient? They're all thinking this in the back of their mind right now.
And so Neelix continues to narrate. He talks about Seven. She was working
in Cargo Bay 2.
And we start to see this energy thing. We see it first in the alcoves, the lights sort of flicker there, and she looks up and scans it.
And no one can get any information to Seven because the comms have been down. So
they can't tell Seven what's up. And so this thing starts moving around the room while she works, and Neelix is narrating this. And finally she realizes the lights begin to flicker. She scans, she sees by the ventilation duct, I think. She sees kind of this energy, you know, solidifying or visible for the first time. And she looks up towards this duct, and all of that nebula gas is sort of going into the duct.
It does intercut with present day Cargo Bay 2, where the more kids are. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we have more lines from Azan and Rebbe. And they're like, here in this Cargo Bay, this is where it happened. And then again, you say it fills up in the ceiling, right? So,
fills up in the ceiling. She tries to leave and the doors won't open.
No.
And we see this cloud sort of lingering up there now, just kind of hanging out. Part of this cloud is up there, and it's, and there's some lightning. It's got like energy in it now. And she manually opens the door. She pulls some panel off the floor or something. I didn't know we could do that, but
And there's also another instance where when she tried to contact the bridge and there was no answer, Icheb stops the story saying, well, why didn't she remodulate her neural transceiver and send a message that way? So again, he's being the know-it-all.
And Neelix is like, he's annoyed. And I love how he scratched his nose in that moment. He's like, that's an interesting question.
You'll have to ask her.
Yeah. Which is funny because he had prosthetics on his nose. So there's no reason for Ethan
for him to scratch
the nose.
No.
Except just to be funny.
Yes. It was funny.
Yeah.
Very much so.
And she does manually open the door. She gets outside, but she turns and there's force fields. She can't leave, you know, one way or the other. This cloud, this nebula cloud, chases her out into that alcove area, and she starts coughing. And basically this nebula cloud of energy sort of attacks her.
Yeah, I wanted her to fall because it was weird. She kind of sat down, fell forward, then fell back. And I thought, wait a minute, I would have fell to my knees and just collapsed forward, not forward and then back. So that was the one of the few things about this episode that sort of annoyed me, where I thought that was weird blocking or weird physicality happening there.
Yeah, it felt a little
forced.
Forced. Yeah.
It felt a little unnatural. It wasn't organic. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
I wonder if she had to land in a certain position for the next scene. Yes. And so she was like, well, this makes no sense, but okay, I guess I could do this.
Now I could see David saying, like, Jerry, go ahead and do whatever you want to do, but you have to end up on your back for the next shot. You know, so I could see him saying that. And then she was trying things out, and that's what we ended up with. So it is what it is.
Yeah. So we go back to the cargo bay at this point when she collapses on the ground and the lantern goes out.
Yes.
You remember this? The lantern. Yes. And he goes, oh, I just have to,
let me go fix this and pick this up. And
yeah, he goes to fix the light, but they're very jumpy at this point. He's got them hooked. And he gets the light back on and he's like, okay, where was I? Oh, yes. Okay. Help is on the way.
Isn't this the one where he turns it on right underneath his face and they all jump back, right? Yeah. Which was awesome. And just the way he said, he goes, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. It was even scarier how he said, I didn't mean to scare you. The line delivery was great.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, you can tell that this is why I think he made this up, because I feel like he was, you know, working it so hard. I don't know. I feel I feel like he was working it and he was trying to scare them. But ultimately, I think he's trying to show them that your fear, you know, can be of use to you, too. Like, so now we go to the hall. Chakotay and Torres show up. They've obviously crawled through Jeffrey's tubes and stayed away from the turbo lift where he was terrified before or terrorized before.
Right.
They find Seven laying unconscious
behind
one of the force fields. They can't shut it down. So Chakotay pulls out a phaser and shoots at the panel to cut the power. And I felt like this shot to me.
Yeah.
I don't think they had any real, obviously no phaser fire, because that's always fake, but usually they'll put sparks or something. I think it was all this it's moment all was so quick. It's all VisiFX.
It's all VisiFX. There's no practical sparks. No. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But they go to Seven and they're going to take her to sick bay.
Yeah. We are now in the mess hall. Yes. 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 And Neelix is narrating the story. He says, now most of us were just going about our business, oblivious to what was happening, but that was all about to change. The lights start flickering. Kim calls to engineering, no response. Neelix calls to the bridge, no response. Kim decides to take control.
Right? Yeah.
So he says, I want everyone to report to their stations until we figure out what's going on. All the crewmen are like, aye, sir, yes. Everyone just moves and scatters. And Neelix feeling nervous. Yes.
Why was Harry eating by himself?
He wasn't. He was with somebody else.
Oh, were you working or something on a pad? I felt like you were lonely.
Okay.
I was like, yeah, there's Harry. I felt like Tom should have gone to lunch with you. I don't know why you were all by yourself.
You should have been there with me, but it's okay. I thought they had some background actor sitting across from me, I think.
Maybe.
So yeah, so Harry does take control and Neelix is still very nervous. And he says, well, maybe I should come with you. The captain might need me. And Kim's like, no, this is this is your post. You might be needed here. And Lisa's like, oh, okay. Well, if you need anything, anything at all, you know where to find me.
Yeah.
So then in the narration, I love this line and the way he delivered it was so beautiful. So there I was. The only thing I could do was wait alone in the dark. After the lights go out, he goes, alone, the lights go out. And he says, in the dark, which was just the timing and everything.
He also made some noises in there. He was like, ooh, ooh.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Oh. It was like yeah.
Vocalizing his.
It was his great, terror. Though. I loved it. I loved it.
And by the way,
yeah,
for some reason, it hit me this episode in a way I never thought about it. So he's got this fire going, the stove.
Yes.
Right. He's got his propane fire or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that kind of propane fire is a fossil fuel. It is a limited resource. Like if you burn that fire, eventually you're going to run out of it. Whereas if it were an electric stove, Tom,
yeah, like a ceramic heating coil or whatever it
is.
Yeah.
Then we have the warp core it's a renewable resource. Why are we burning?
You're so right.
A fossil fuel.
You're so right.
That is limited.
You called it.
It's all of a sudden I was like, it makes no sense.
Yeah. We would not be doing that, would we?
No, I don't think so.
Oh my God.
But it's a cool looking thing. His stove. But
yeah.
Yeah. Very, very
looks
primitive.
Great on camera, but it's not practical.
Not practical at all.
No, good point. Good catch.
Anyway, we go to the bridge.
Yep.
We learn that environmental controls have failed, that we are dead in space, that the warp drive impulse engines are not responding.
And he says that Ensign Paris told me it was hotter than the Tarkanian desert on the bridge.
Yeah, that's
and this hard. this is the best line, because you turn to Tuvok and you go, don't you ever sweat? And Tuvok says, not unless the temperature reaches 350 degrees Kelvin with a humidity factor at approximately. And Paris is like, and forget I even asked like that. Yeah.
Forget I asked and walks off. Yeah, it's funny. It's a funny little bit.
It is.
Then we see Janeway up
talking to Voyager
at your
again.
Station.
Yeah.
She's leaning into the console and saying, you know, whatever. What does she say?
She says, she goes, I'll make you a deal, Voyager. The next M-class planetoid we find. We'll sit down and I'll give you a nice maintenance overhaul. What do you say? Tom, check the con. So she's talking to Voyager.
She thinks maybe this will work. She literally thinks if I talk to the ship.
But the funny thing is, when you go, I don't know what you did, Captain, but I've got helm control back. And she goes, thanks, my friend. She continues to talk to the ship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet she calls it Voyager, not the Voyager like Tom does. So
yep.
Maybe that's but the then, way to get through to the ship.
Tom's over there starting to, you know, trying to start to drive the thing again. She says she detects an EM surge near the console.
Yes.
And
in
says,
your
Paris,
console. Yes.
Move away. Get away from there. But no, it's too late. And this strike, this
comes
spark,
up
this...
and you can see your skull too. Like you hear, right? I mean, when it hits you, it just electrifies your entire everything.
Yeah, my face, my head, my body.
Yeah, and you
and
scream.
I wrote down,
yeah, you're
good,
like, ah!
Good suffering.
Yeah,
I wrote
suffered.
Down good suffering, Robin.
You did suffer well.
Myself.
I thought it was excellent suffering.
And I kind of go back. I fall down onto the console. And then when I come up, I have all this burn makeup on. And it was good burn makeup.
It was really good burn makeup. But clearly that happened probably 2 hours later. Because you had to go to makeup and get all that stuff applied and then come back in. And also, you probably changed your Starfleet uniform to one that was a little bit damaged as well from the sparks.
Yep.
So they had a switch for you. You had to change out of that uniform. You had to get all that stuff applied to your face and then come back. So that's what I'm saying. Would you agree? 2 hours later, probably?
Oh, yeah, probably.
Maybe more.
Also, when I saw this burn makeup, I do remember one night rapping in the burn makeup.
Yeah.
I think I've told this story. And I told the makeup guys, they started removing it. I'm like, no, don't.
Keep it on. Let me keep it on. Yeah.
Let me keep it on when I drive home. I want to see
it. It was this episode, you think?
It might have been this one.
Wow.
It was that kind of burn makeup.
Yeah.
And I went and I stopped at like a gas station or 7-Eleven or something.
Yeah.
It's Hollywood.
Nobody even batted an eye.
Nobody cared. Nobody
you
said, are you okay or anything?
You should. If I were you, I would have stood in the middle of 7-Eleven and I would have turned around to everyone there and said, does anyone believe in helping your fellow human being who's been burned? No, they didn't.
I got nothing.
That's too bad.
Well,
it looked good though. You look pretty messed up, man. You look really messed up.
I suffered good. I made a note of it. Good suffering.
It was so good. That's it. I think you should have been dead. Like, that's how hardcore that was, but you survived.
I agree, which will come up in a moment in sick bay. I'll have a comment about that, but it was severe. I should have been dead. Yeah. But we do realize that there's oxygen depletion on the bridge. Air is being removed. We can't restore power or anything. Janeway's like, everybody evacuate.
Yeah.
And
get out of here.
Everyone's now. Leaving the bridge, coughing, gasping for breath. We cut into sick bay. There's seven on the main bio bed. And she seems fine. She's getting up.
Okay. Yeah.
Doctors treated her from her attack by the nebula.
Right.
And Torres and Chakotay are there, very concerned about Seven.
Yeah.
And then Tom is rushed in, looking, as you said, like he should be dead.
I don't know if he... I don't think you come in this scene.
Yeah. He's rushed in. He's
yes, that's right. That's right. You did come in this scene. Sorry.
He's rushed in by Janeway and Chakotay, put on a side bed.
Yeah.
Torres does run over for a minute.
Yeah.
But I have a comment here.
I know what you're going to say.
As you said... should have been dead. And there's five of our crew members, my fellow bridge officers, standing around having a calm conversation while I'm dying from the most horrific burns, laying 2 feet in front of them. I wrote down, thanks everybody for caring. Hey, nobody seemed that upset.
I was not there. If I was there, I would have cared more than that. And I also felt that in the blocking, they should have put Torres closest to your head.
Yeah, but she wasn't paying attention. She's looking back at...
But she's Chakotay, your lady, right? She should be the closest to your head, not Janeway standing there.
And
okay,
maybe
so that's
feeling a little concerned. Bit. have this...
Okay, to her credit, she did have a very concerned... What happened? So she did give but then after that...
Forget it.
It was sort of like, well, he might die anyway. I better just not think too much about him right
now. It literally felt like a business meeting. They're comparing notes on what's going on, and nobody cares about suffering Paris right there. Anyway.
Yes.
Let's move on.
I don't want you to be too upset.
Okay. They compare notes, you know. They talk about the EM discharge that almost killed Paris. Don't seem to care. Seven was attacked by this thing. They seem more concerned about that.
There's more concern about the doctor's matrix destabilizing. Okay.
Yes. So that's what I'm saying.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so they talk about they tried to vent gas from deck seven, but that's had EM discharges. Then Janeway starts to think that it could be an electromagnetic life form that's trying to change the environment of our ship for itself.
Well, Chakotay thinks that too. Basically.
And Chakotay thinks that.
Yeah.
And then the doctor's program starts destabilizing and everybody panics because God forbid we lose the doctor. Who cares about the pilot?
You should have, when they said the matrix, my matrix is destabilizing, you should have said, I'm not dead yet. Yeah. In the background and just raising your hand. Like,
yeah. I feel like I should have, that would have been a great little callback to throw in.
Oh, I would have loved that. Oh my God.
I wish I thought of it.
Okay.
They transfer his program to the mobile emitter. At this point, this is where they do that. And by the way, Janeway's got the open jacket style uniform. So we start to see Janeway means business because she's got the jacket open. And, you know, more crew members are going to mean business as we get a little deeper in. I think your sleeves get pushed up.
Yeah.
Anyway, they evacuate sickbay.
Yes.
Enough about that scene because nobody cares about Tom. Okay, we go out to the hall. There's red alert. Harry's walking. Let's talk about Harry and his scene with Celis.
Oh, you give me the giggles, man. I can't get that out of my head right now. Just
I'm not dead yet.
I'm not dead yet. Please, with someone, you can bring a dermo regenerator to me, please, right here. My face needs a little.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. No respect. No respect.
Let's go in the corridor. Let's go in the hallway.
Let's go in the corridor.
Harry's this is the scene I don't even remember about. I'm like, oh my God. I had a whole other scene. It's a good scene. It's a good scene. Except for when I go, where is it? The part where, slow down that part. Cause let's set it up though.
Okay. So Harry's walking by himself down this red alert hallway. The lights are going on off. Very cool shots of Harry walking. And suddenly,
yeah, and it's red light. It's red. It's the red light.
Red
right?
alert yeah, light. It's is red going. Alert light. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, Celis pops around a corner, hits you in the stomach.
Like she's holding
a,
like a
with a rifle.
What? No,
wasn't it a rifle or something? No. Or a tool or what was it?
It was a. It was one of those little plastic suitcases that hold like tools and stuff in them. Oh, it was like it was like a that. She double handed that and hit me in the stomach with it, which is not really a good weapon, to be perfectly honest.
That's right. It was made of plastic. It was some kind of case.
Yeah, it was a case. So
she thought you were an alien.
Yeah,
she thought you were an alien invader, basically.
Not only that, then she thinks it's Borg assimilation. She thinks all kinds of things. Like it's her imagination running.
Yeah, she's panicking
over time, she's overreacting to everything. Clearly. And Harry does kind of calm her down. You know, he's trying to show her or tell her. He's trying to use logic, basically. Like, okay, you know, come on now. I mean, she's sitting here saying, well, I tried this area. Everyone's gone. I tried this other area. So she is flipping out.
Yeah, no one's been assimilated, Harry says. Yep, like, calm down.
Yep. Yeah, Harry does says, well, there's no one on the bridge either. And Celis goes, you see? But maybe I was right. Maybe the reason we can't find anyone is because they're all simulated. And that's when Kim goes, slow down. And that's the part I don't like. I did not like the way I acted in that. Yeah.
No, I liked the scene. I thought it was funny. Really? She was panicking and you were trying to calm her down, getting impatient. You know, stop it. Enough. Yeah. I thought I liked it.
I thought it was too harsh. I think I could have found a different way to do it. Like a little bit more whimsical.
You could have
delivery.
Said, we're not dead yet.
We're not dead yet, Celis. Yeah. We're all right. That would have been a better.
That would have been a better line.
Yes. Agreed. Yes. Or if I said, in the words of my buddy Tom, we're not dead yet. So I would have given you credit as well.
Thank you.
So,
Thank you. But he does eventually kind of calm her down. He's like, let's get to engineering. And they, just as they start to head out, she's like, can we stop by the weapons locker first?
Yeah. No. This is why I know she didn't have a weapon, because she asked about stopping by a weapons locker at the end. So maybe that's what confused you. But man, I'm still blaming you. You should not have come up with that line. I'm going to be thinking, you're going to make me laugh.
The whole episode.
The rest of this episode, I'm going to be giggling. Yeah. It's not dead yet. All right, moving on.
Moving on to the mess hall. Neelix is there. We hear the narration. He's been, you know, alone for hours in here. Hears a noise, starts to go to the door. I love this shot through the portal thing.
Yeah.
He's like trying to get, he has to manually pull the door open. Goes out in the hall.
Yeah, he sees the turbo lift in the distance and it's doing this.
Open, shut, open, shut.
And
open,
I kept thinking, man, Will Toms is back there going, making sure that thing was going properly. And then it actually increases in speed, in tempo.
Faster,
as he gets closer, it starts going, ding, 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 ding. And I was wondering, maybe it was Will Toms and someone else back there. Maybe he needed a second person to make it do that
over and over again.
Yeah,
by the way, when he hears the noise out in the hall, sees the door.
Yeah.
He goes, Tom, is that you? It's not funny or something like that. I was like, what? Not only does nobody care that I'm dying, but they're blaming me for everything. Like, what? Why? It's not always Tom, you guys. It's not like bad things that happen aren't always Tom.
What was the exact line that he said? What did he say? He said, wait. Oh, Tom, if that's you, this isn't funny. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not Tom because he's almost dead.
That's what you said. You should have popped your head around the corner. Still messed up. I'm still not dead yet. Just like that.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
I like as he approached the door, the camera inside the turbo lift and the door is opening and shutting.
Yeah.
And suddenly behind him, he turns around and there's a figure with like a Silence of the Lambs mask on his face.
I thought Bane from Batman, but okay. Yeah. Silence of the Lambs as well. That's fine. Okay.
He screams, stay away. It's Tuvok. Yeah. And Tuvok says, calm yourself, Mr. Neelix.
Yeah. But I love that shot of Tuvok. Very nice, tight close up. And he pulls it off, you know, because you're not sure what it is until you know it's Tuvok. But
And Neelix, they talk outside.
Yeah.
By the way, the door keeps going behind Neelix. So they must have looped this whole scene. Because of the door noise.
Yeah.
And I thought it was very good looping.
There was an area in here that I felt, I was like, oh, wow, they looped this too. And I can't remember where it was now. Mm. Dang it.
Well, okay, this scene going. I thought was very well looped.
And they definitely it didn't seem like it. Yeah, they did a great job.
But they head off to engineering too. we go to Cargo Bay, more of Neelix's, lots of dialogue that he had. He talks about climbing through Jeffrey's tubes, that he was terrified. And Icheb says, well, fear distracts people from accomplishing your goals. You know, you should have, I forget what he said, but it was something like, well, you should have just decided not to be afraid.
Icheb says, fear distracts people from accomplishing their goals. Neelix replies, well, that's true, I suppose. On the other hand, fear can sometimes be very healthy. Mm-hmm. And that's what Mazzotti says, explain. And Neelix says, well, it keeps you alert. It keeps you from putting yourself in unnecessary danger. Then Mazzotti relates a story. She says that she was afraid once. And Icheb is kind of digging into her. He's like, you've been afraid many times, you know. And Icheb's like, Neelix goes, well, do you want to tell us about it? And Mazzotti says, it was when we were first disconnected from the hive mind before Seven found us. I couldn't hear anyone else's thoughts anymore. I felt alone. And Neelix goes, well, I understand why that was frightening. When you're scared, it helps to have someone to talk to, doesn't it? And Mazzotti's like, yes. And Neelix says, of course, in my case, the only one person I had to talk to was Commander Tuvok. And so that's the end of that scene.
I love this scene. Yeah, that's the end of that scene. I love this scene because to me, this is the heart of the whole episode.
I agree.
Talking about fear and how it can be good.
That's the takeaway. Yeah, this is the scene of the takeaway lesson. Definitely.
Absolutely. And so well articulated in the writing and the way that Mazzotti's story kind of expands on it.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it leads us into the only person I had to talk to was Tuvok. We cut into the Jeffrey's tube. I love that Neelix wanted to tell him a story. He says, have I ever told you about the crew of the Saloxia? And Tuvok says, if I say yes, will you prevent me from telling the story again?
And he doesn't even, Neelix doesn't even skip a beat. He doesn't even acknowledge Tuvok. Uh-huh. He goes right into the story.
Goes into this scary story, basically about a crew caught in some gaseous anomaly. And they died, you know, one by one, very slowly. And the ghost ship was found 80 years later.
They had to, like, they had to draw straws of this Talaxian freighter because there was limited oxygen. So whoever got the short straw suffocated to death is what it was. So it's a horrible story.
Horrible story. Tuvok didn't want to hear it. He heard it anyway. I also noticed they were crawling down that Jeffrey's tubes shoulder to shoulder, side by side.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, my God, that's horrible. Because they weren't big. They really weren't that big. So that was a tough to fit those two gentlemen side by side had to have been tricky. And then resetting every time.
Yeah. And as I've said before, it's just painful on your knees. It's not a fun place for any Star Trek actor to be is on their knees crawling through a dadgum Jeffrey's tube.
Jeffrey's tube. We cut to the cargo bay after he talks about the ghost ship. And the kids want to talk about, were they decomposed?
Yeah.
Did they eat each other? Yeah. Like, there's been all these horror movie questions.
And he jumps out of that immediately when she goes eating each other. All right, that's enough.
That's enough.
I do like in the prior scene, I'm going to jump back for a split second. Like, as they're going through there, Neelix is like, pleasant thoughts. Like, he's sitting here trying to, like, keep himself, like, you know, occupy his mind so he's not going to hyperventilate. So. Yeah. So anyway, he cuts them off about talking about eating each other, eating the remaining crew members. And we're back in the Jeffrey's tube again. Mm-hmm. Neelix talks about that they ran into an obstacle when the hatch refuses to open. Tuvok basically opens it manually and they look inside and see it's filling with the nebula gas. Mm-hmm. And this is not a good thing.
No.
They shut the hatch and Tuvok talks about if he can access environmental controls, he may be able to vent that gas out of there. And so Neelix goes, well, there's got to be another way around. And Tuvok's like, well, okay, it would take probably hours to reach engineering by an alternate route. So, you know, there's no guarantee that they would find a clear path that way either. Mm-hmm. So Neelix keeps going with his little mantra of pleasant thoughts.
We go to engineering. The crew is gathering there. Mm-hmm. This is where I know everybody means business because Harry's got his sleeves rolled up. Clearly means business.
It does.
He means business too.
And everyone kind of has a little sheen of Evian water applied to their face to look like they're sweaty.
Environmental controls are starting to fail. Harry feels guilty that he ordered Neelix to stay in the mess hall. And Janeway says, don't feel guilty. You follow procedure.
Yeah.
B'Elanna calls. Janeway heads over there. B'Elanna goes, bad news. This life form is now in our main computer matrix.
Yes, it's infiltrated the main computer matrix. That's not a good thing.
Not a good thing at all. And suddenly we hear Captain Janeway. We hear the computer calling Captain Janeway. And then the computer starts reporting Captain Janeway is in main engineering. And Janeway's like, what is going on?
Yeah. And Kim thinks this is a repeat of what happened on the bridge. He's like, look, sorry, Captain. I know this is annoying, but I'll shut it down. Janeway's like, no, wait a minute. Wait a minute. She goes, this is Captain Janeway. Respond. And all of a sudden the computer says authorization code required. And Janeway's like, Janeway Pi Alpha. Chakotay's confused. Like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Janeway has a hunch, but she thinks the life form is trying to communicate with them. And it's interesting because this is now a conversation between Janeway and the ship, but it's using the computer voice, which is
It's kind Majel of a go-between.
Barrett Roddenberry. Yeah, so Majel had a big part in this.
Majel had a lot of lines here. And she does say that when she's trying to communicate to the computer, she tells Torres to call up the system syntax subroutines.
Yes, to help it along.
To help the alien respond to her words and tells the alien to use it. She actually says to the computer, you know, we've got the syntax subroutines so we can communicate better. She asks the alien, why did it come aboard? Yeah. And then the alien, the computer says, go to astrometrics.
Right.
And she's like, why? And it repeats, go to astrometrics. Yeah. Harry says, astrometrics is flooded with gas. The computer says, life support in astrometrics has been restored.
So now it's no longer filled with gas.
So this is working. This conversation is getting her somewhere.
Yeah, Chakotay's skeptical. He thinks it might be a trap.
Mm-hmm. But she says, I'm going to go to astrometrics 7. You're with me.
She can't let it take over her ship. She wants to talk to this thing or whatever it is.
We cut back to the tubes. Tuvok is working in the little console there. But Neelix is sitting in the background in that shot meditating.
He's leading him through the meditation, this guided meditation. Awesome. I love this, and this just so reminds me of
a happy place.
Of going to yoga or doing some yoga.
Yeah, right exactly. Yeah. He's having like a guided meditation, and he talks to Neelix about take yourself back to a happy memory.
Yeah.
So we go into this flashback of Neelix remembering a super happy birthday dinner that he had. Janeway, everybody's there gathered around Neelix. He's super happy, and Janeway brings out this platter, covered platter of, you think it's a cake or some amazing meal. She sets it down, pulls off the cover, and it's a nebula.
It's nebula soup.
Nebula soup. And I was like, oh, yummy, just like mom's recipe. Nebula soup, delicious. I think Mizadi says,
Captain Janeway served you. No, she says, Captain Janeway served you nebula gas. And she's like, no. Neelix is like, no, of course not. It was just my imagination playing tricks on me during the meditation. My head was too full of scary images for me to relax. The captain, on the other hand, seemed to be getting things under control. And now we jump over to the astrometrics lab. We have Seven and Janeway. And they're wearing their things.
They're wearing them as they come in the door, the gas masks, and then they pull them off. But it's a cool look. You know, sweaty and their hair, both their hair's messed up. It's nice.
There's
to
a lot
see
of
that.
Times where people had no mask on. I was like, guys, there's poison gas everywhere. Why aren't you wearing the mask?
Yeah, it was not consistent.
It was like, what the heck is happening here? Yeah.
Yeah, it was not consistent with the mask wearing.
Yeah.
They get in there, though, and Janeway realizes the alien wants to go back to its nebula.
Yeah.
Where they had been collecting
it
that
shows,
deuterium.
Yeah, it's going through the navigational logs to find the actual nebula. And so now Janeway knows, just wants to go home, basically.
And she says, I can get you back there. You just need to give us helm control back. And so it tells Janeway to go to the bridge, but it institutes a level 10 security clearance for the bridge. So it only wants Janeway
only wants
to go
her.
Back.
No one else. Yeah.
So Seven can't go with her. Tom can't go fly, but he's dying because nobody cares. But anyway, she's going to have to do it because he's basically dead.
I'm still not dead yet.
Yeah, I like at the end of the scene, though. She's like, you know, whatever she says at the end. And then she puts the gas mask on in a close up and like she's ready for business.
Yes, she is. She is.
We go to the bridge. She is flying the ship. And then we look up on the view screen. They come out of warp. And she says, she asks the computer, is the view screen working properly? And it is. And the nebula is gone. And so now the alien life form is mad. Cuts life support on the bridge, says abandon ship, orders her to, you know, and the crew to abandon ship.
Mm-hmm.
We cut to the cargo bay. Neelix is narrating. He says the alien wanted the ship for itself.
Right.
And it would kill anyone who stayed on board.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the bridge, Janeway's trying to negotiate with this thing. Yeah. She said, look, I'll find you a new nebula.
Yeah, you know. Another Class J nebula. It'll be just like the old one.
Aliens not listening.
No.
Oxygen depletion is getting critical. She puts the gas mask back on.
Mm-hmm.
We cut inside the tube where Tuvok has been working and Neelix was meditating.
Yeah.
And Tuvok gets zapped by the alien in the systems.
And I like the transition because right before that, Neelix says, as in his narration, he says, as the captain was facing one of her worst fears, losing her ship, I was with Tuvok and about to face one of mine. And that's when Tuvok gets zapped.
Tuvok gets zapped. Neelix goes to help him.
Yeah.
Then Neelix looks up, sees the gas coming towards him in the Jeffries tube.
And Tuvok says, go without me.
I'm too injured. Take this gas mask.
Neelix says, absolutely not. And he's Tuvok says, I'm giving you an order. Neelix says, I'm disobeying it. You're coming. I love this line. You're coming with me if I have to drag you by your pointy little ears. That's what he says.
Yeah, it's great. Neelix stays there. He's like taking a breath and then giving Tuvok a breath of the gas. So they're sort of sharing the gas mask.
Yeah.
He looks up and he sees this gas sort of forming into a face. This is the first time, I think, in the episode where that gas sort of takes on any recognizable features of a,
Didn't it also take on a face when he opened up in the mess hall, when they opened up the dish?
Oh, it was so fast. I didn't catch it there.
It looked like it was coming out into like a face. Yes. So,
But he sees this thing coming at him.
Pleasant thoughts.
Mm-hmm. And he says he's got to control his fear.
Yeah.
So we cut to a corridor next. And Janeway is telling the alien, look, if you kill us, you're going to kill yourself. You need this crew.
Yeah, first she asked, do you understand what killing everyone on this ship means? And the computer does understand. I mean, the life form understands it by the computer voice saying, to deprive of life, extinguish. So Janeway knows this. But then she throws in the logic, well, yes, you can extinguish all of us, but guess what's going to happen? You need us to maintain these systems, the primary systems, the secondary systems. So without us, you will perish yourself after a certain amount of time. All the systems are going to basically go offline and you're screwed. And the alien life form understands this. It starts understanding this or is unable to confirm. But Janeway says, access internal sensors, run a ship-wide diagnostic, see for yourself. The alien still says, abandon ship. But Janeway says she comes into engineering. Is that right? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Well, the creature in the corridor, she's basically saying, you're going to die if you kill all of us. Yeah, right. The systems are, you know, going to eventually fail and you'll die too. And the creature still ultimately refuses abandonment. Right. So we go to engineering and there's this cool, like, push in Steadicam shot of rushing towards the door of engineering as she comes in and she runs in, announces, we're abandoning ship, escape pods, everybody's in the escape pods. Yeah. And I love the Steadicam sort of wraparound as she comes in, gives that order. Everybody starts leaving.
Yeah.
As they're leaving, Neelix and Tuvok come out of a Jeffries tube.
That door right there.
By door. And they join them. So they're all heading to the escape pods. We cut in a quarter. All the shuttle pods were launched.
Except for one,
he says. Chakotay was going to leave with Janeway. And Chakotay goes in. But then she orders the door shut and stays in the corridor.
Yeah.
And she says, I did what you want. What more do you want? Basically, she's like, you know, everyone's leaving.
Well, the computer has, the diagnostic is now completed. And the computer realized, okay, estimated time to failure, 6 days, 13 hours. Janeway's, that's about right. I told you so. And the rest of the scene plays out like a game of chicken. Mm-hmm. Basically, Janeway says it wants Janeway to go to engineering and become its own personal slave and maintain everything, all the systems for the nebula gas, the entity, the being. And then Janeway says, no, you're just going to have to kill me. I'm not going to go. And so some gas starts
to come out, dramatic scene with just Kate, basically. Kate talking to the computer in the hallway.
Yep.
Super dramatic standoff scene. She wants control of her ship. If she doesn't get control back, then they're both going to die.
Right. It's my way or the highway. Janeway or the highway.
And she's choking and yelling and the computer is yelling. And it was very dramatic scene.
It was. It's probably the most dramatic scene with the computer voice that we've ever had.
That way anyone's ever. Yes. It's the biggest fight with a computer we've ever seen in Star Trek.
Yeah.
We cut to cargo bay. Neelix says it looks like the alien was going to call her bluff.
Yeah.
But on her very last breath, we cut back to the hallway and the lights come on and
the gas is all sucked out of the
systems
area.
Restored. Yep. Mm-hmm. Lights on. Janeway won. She didn't let her fear get the best of her. And she wins that standoff. And we go to Cargo Bay. Neelix says it took 2 days for the crew to return. And an isolated environment was created on deck 12 to contain the creature until we could find another suitable nebula.
And the creature has been living there ever since.
Mazzotti says at this point, she turns to Ichab. She says, I told you there was a monster on deck 12. And Ichab's like, it's not a monster. It's an alien. So alien they're still bickering.
Yeah.
Alien life form. Mm-hmm. Suddenly the ship is shaken while the kids have just heard the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And a few seconds later, main power comes back on. I guess they're drifting through this nebula while Neelix tells his story is completed. The lights come back on. Borg alcoves power up again.
But they're still concerned. Rebby and Azan are like, well, what if the life form didn't leave? And Azan's like, well, what if it wants revenge? And Neelix says, what if I told you I made up the whole thing? And Mazzotti goes, Naomi told me you always exaggerate. And Ichab goes, I knew the story wasn't true. The moment you said the Bessard collectors produced Nadion emissions. So Neelix is like, well, I should have known better than tried fooling the four of you. All right. In you go. Pleasant dreams. Back in your regeneration coves, you know. And that's the end of that scene in Cargo Bay 2. But the way he said that made me feel like there was truth to this story at the very end. That's
I know. It's, you don't know. By the way, when the lights come back on and we see where they were all seated around for the campfire, there's some props set around there.
Yeah.
And one of the props, Rebecca pointed out in the overhead shot, is a dog food container like we have. We have that dog food container for Walter's food. It's like a big plastic thing with a circular top on it. It's basically they had a dog food container for set decoration. And and it was right there in their little camp.
I'm going to have to go rewatch that scene now. Good catch, Rebecca.
Big,
good
big
catch.
Dog food container.
Very funny.
Yep, part of the set deck.
Wow, maybe the budget on set dressing was really low for this episode. Someone's like, can someone bring to work the dog food container thingy? And someone was like, okay, I got one. That's how it happened.
Yeah.
I'm still not dead yet.
Okay.
We go to the bridge and Neelix walks in and Chakotay says, how are the kids? And Janeway says, were they frightened while the power was off?
Yeah.
And Neelix is covering here. He's like, yeah, fine. I told him a story. Nothing too scary.
Yeah.
And Tom's like, oh, Mother Goose probably.
Yeah.
And Neelix is like, no, I would never tell a Mother Goose story.
Some of those are frightening, those stories, right?
Yeah. And Neelix looks out at the nebula on screen and he says, I hope it lives happily ever after.
I love that.
Maybe it is
line.
True. I don't know. Maybe.
See, look at that.
I don't know.
Oh my goodness.
Or was it all his imagination? We'll never know.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's your takeaway for this episode?
My takeaway comes from that one scene we mentioned earlier, is that, you know, you can either choose to let your fear defeat you or it can become your ally and you can use it to keep yourself alert. And it's just, we're all going to be afraid. We're all going to have fears, but it's how we choose to process that fear, you know, and what we do with it. So that's the lesson for me. What about you?
Yeah, similar to that. I mean, don't let fear get the best of you, definitely. But also when dealing with fear or dealing with uncertain circumstances in your life, it is good to talk to somebody like Mazzotti was talking about. So, you know, make sure you reach out to someone if you're dealing with something that you need to have someone as a sounding board or someone just to listen to you sometimes can dissipate that fear. Right. The other lesson is, I don't know, just that moment when Neelix did not leave Tuvok lying there. He's like, no, I'm not leaving you behind. So, make sure you're there for your friends. Don't leave them. Don't leave them hanging.
Janeway didn't leave her friends.
No man or no person left behind is what it is. Yeah. So,
And the other lesson is talk to your technology people. Talk to your computer, talk to your cell phone, because it's listening. And it matters. It wants to be heard. And the last lesson is don't let your pilot get burned to a crisp, basically die, and ignore him. That's the most important lesson. Please would have some compassion for your
when your pilot's face looks like burnt toast, you should actually give him more attention and more caring and empathy, not
than
less.
The other healthy people standing around the bed.
It was like a business meeting.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
What's your rating on this?
Oh, I'm going to give it a 9.3. So,
wow.
Yeah, I really love this episode.
I liked this episode a lot too.
I think this is a great episode to watch over Halloween. I think this is a fabulous, you know, scary movie kind of thing. And we rarely do anything like this.
No, it was really well done. Well written.
The writing, directing, the acting, except for my crappy moment in the hallway with them.
No, it was all good. Zealous.
But okay. Overall,
except for everyone ignoring the dead pilot, it was a great episode.
And I'm who knew that the comedic element would come from that part of you not having any attention? What are you giving it?
I'm giving it 8.4. I also rated it high, but I thought I would go higher than you. You went higher than me.
No, I went way higher than you.
Wow.
I went way higher than you. I think the fans are going to give it an 8.1.
Let's see. The Admiral and Captain average rating for The Haunting of Deck 12, 7.7.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
0.4 away. So, all right.
Wow. I'm surprised we liked it more than that low.
Yeah. It's a great episode. Hands down. And it used everybody.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
it even used the Borg kids too. So there
absolutely.
You go.
I thought it involved the entire crew in a great way. Except for the Doctor. Doctor didn't have much.
Yeah, but he's had so much already. We just saw an episode of him playing him and him. So, you get double dosage of any Doctor fans should not be upset about him not getting much in this episode because he got double shot of the prior episode. Yeah. So that's
agreed.
All. Yeah.
All right. Well, that was great. What is next week's adventure? Our season finale.
Yeah, it's our season finale of season 6, basically, is what this is. And it is Unimatrix Zero, Part 1.
Oh, okay.
You remember that title, right?
Does that sound
familiar? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so clearly it is going to be a Borg episode from that title alone, Unimatrix Zero, Part 1. All right, thank you everyone for tuning in to our recap and discussion of The Haunting of Deck 12. And yes, Bribie and I will be back next week with our recap and discussion of Unimatrix Zero, Part 1. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. See you next week.
Thanks, everybody.